Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, this is part of the annual wrap-up. We're going to be doing the segment on the Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin. Franklin is over in Middle Tennessee, snowed in, and I'm over in Western Tennessee, snowed in. So there's plenty of white stuff, Franklin, to keep our minds clear.
Oh, yeah.
How are you getting out and feeding the animals?
I let somebody else do that today. Justin and Christian, we're all out doing that today. And all the kids are out of school, and they're all playing and happy. So it's great.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Okay, well, we had a very interesting year in precious metals because we had the first double-digit rise since 2010, which I'm sure was good news. So why don't I turn this over to you, and you've prepared some really excellent charts. Why don't we just walk through and tell us about 2017.
Okay, well, let me make a general statement about 2017. It's more amazing that gold rose 13% during the year because there were at least two bubbles that were sucking all the money in the world into themselves, one in Bitcoin and one in the U.S. dollar. And there's no question in my mind that a lot of that money that went into Bitcoin was coming out of precious metals, because I watched as the premium on physical gold and silver sank to levels that we had really never before seen. So that tells me that physical product is being thrown on the market. I talk to wholesalers, and they tell me, oh, I'm choking on this stuff. And I watch those premiums go down, so I know I've got cause and effect, and I'm connecting them together. So the first chart shows Bitcoin up 1,439% in 2017. It topped on the 16th of December at 19,343. And today, a month later, it's at 11,758, down 39%. On rumors that South Korea is going to choke off Bitcoin trading, and the Chinese already have choked it down. So it looks like the governments of the world are doing the predictable thing. They're going after it. But I think that Bitcoin has broken. But that was expectable, because if you look at that chart, that's a classic parabolic chart. And at its height, it exceeded the increases in the 1635-1638 tulip mania in Holland, which is the greatest bubble in history until Bitcoin.
Let me ask you a question, Franklin, because in March, the U.S. cut North Korea off of SWIFT.
Yes.
And whether it was North Korea or organized crime, it was pretty free. Bitcoin was pretty free and unregulated to do a whole variety of transactions that were either controlled or illegal on the major systems. So how much, do you have any sense on how much that contributed to the bubble?
I don't see that as a major cause. That's always been out there as a concern with Bitcoin. But what I see is, you know, just, believe it or not, middle-class, young, unmarried Japanese traders.
Right.
Were the, as I remember, one of the biggest holders. And there are a lot of Asians, Koreans, Chinese, who have jumped into Bitcoin. At one point this year, Chinese were using Bitcoin as a way to get money out of the country. They could buy money locally and then transfer it out of the country through Bitcoin. So how much of that, I don't know. I don't have any sense of the percentage of that. But that is the excuse, and it was always the predictable excuse that governments are using to crack down on it. Oh, well, they're using this Bitcoin for international terrorism and money laundering and so forth, which is the excuse they always use to invade privacy. I'm not in favor of international terrorism or money laundering, but it's just preposterous. I've watched since 1971, while the U.S. government has done, and other governments have done, everything possible to eliminate financial privacy. So,
right. So I didn't mean it that way. In other words, I think part of the demand is just there's a tremendous hunger in this world for people to be create their own currencies, including local currencies.
Yep.
And there's a great hunger to operate outside the control of governments for millions of different reasons.
And oh,
me, part of the part of the euphoria just is coming from the government being hands off for a few years and letting people do their own thing. I mean, to me, if anything, it suggests what could happen if we really had markets.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, but see, they don't want you to have any financial privacy at all.
Right. Right.
This is the point that I've been making since 1985, at least, since when they came up, the IRS floated its famous 5-year plan to create a consumer computer dossier on everybody in the United States. This is not new. None of this is new. That's what they've intended to do, and the Internet has played into their hands. Social media has played into their hands. The digitization of financial transfers has played into their hands, and
right.
they've used it as strongly as they could.
Right.
So, you know, and here's the fact. Just because you're suspicious of me doesn't mean you have a right to take away my privacy. And
right.
just because you're suspicious doesn't mean I've done anything, right?
Right.
You know,
there's right.
some places we want privacy. Just
right.
finance is one of them. Well, let me move on. You're going to get me preaching now. Let me move on to this Dow chart, this weekly Dow chart that goes back to 2009 when the market bottomed after the 2008 financial crisis. And you'll notice that it was in a channel. A trading channel, and it made what we call a throwover out of that channel in 2017. And generally speaking, when a market pierces the upper boundary of a channel like that, it's not necessarily a sign of strength, it's a sign of topping. A couple of things that I would point out on this chart, that is, I think, the most overbought the Dow has ever been on the RSI up at the top of the market, up at the top of the chart. And then if you look at the moving average convergence divergence indicator down below, that's probably about as high as it's ever been. But you see that huge distance between the 200-day moving average, which is that wavy red line, and the market today. And the whole logic of that indicator is that markets usually revert to their mean, their average. And so that market is trading way, 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 way away from its 200-day moving average. And so the farther it trades away, the greater the likelihood that it's going to revert back to mean. So that right there is a chart that's looking for a top. It's not exactly parabolic, but it's certainly looking to top. This is a sort of close-up of the Dow. And you can see this three-step rise where you've got an accelerating acceleration. And that's what we've seen since last August, where the market starts rising, and then it rises faster, and then it rises faster, and now it's going almost straight up. And today might be a good day for it to top. It gapped up today, who knows? But
I wanted to mention one thing. I'll talk about it in the other section of this segment of the annual wrap-up. I don't know if you're familiar with Jeremy Grantham, but he's one of the most respected investment advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a series. He does a quarterly newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been very frustrated because on the theory that things revert to the mean, you know, the P.E. should have dropped a long time ago.
Yes.
And in the equity markets. And one of the things he pointed out was he thinks there's a permanent or near permanent shift up in the PEs because of essentially government helping to create and guarantee corporate monopolies. And what
yes.
he's saying is we've shifted to a higher level of profits and PEs because government is basically engineering this, and it's harmful. He even admitted that it was harmful to the GNP. So you're harming the economy by basically killing competition, but guaranteeing corporate franchises. And basically, one of the things he said is, you know, don't expect that to change, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. This is a long-term trend.
Well, central banks and sovereign wealth funds own more than half of all equities in the world. I don't know if you knew that or not. I mean,
And that's a big shift from, it used to be pension funds owned half.
Well, the point is, it's not private hands.
Right.
Even
it's
if
government
it's
hands.
Funds, they, their combined
right.
buying might affect the market, but it does not, it can't do what they do. It can't print those, it can't print money. And printing money is what's held them up. And it's a kind of a Potemkin village that they've created, that where if the stock market is going up, that must mean that the economy is doing well. But when you look at the price earnings ratios and other ratios, it's just not, it doesn't make any economic sense at all. That's an interesting argument. I hadn't heard that. I'm familiar with him, but I hadn't heard that. But it does kind of sound like Irving, I can't think of his name, the comment that he made in 1929 that stocks have reached a permanently high level, a permanently high plateau. He said that right as they were about to crash. So, but anyway, that certainly they have the governments and central banks through sovereign wealth funds are having an enormous effect on the market. Just their buying, just coming in and buying, because they don't have the same economic goals that a normal investor would have. Well, having said that, here's the other big piece of news. If we look at chart number 4, which is the U.S. dollar index. The U.S. dollar index before 2015 had engaged in a raging rally that took it from about 70 up to 103, almost 104 at the beginning of 2017. And you can see that. That's what this chart shows here. But something has changed. And what has changed is this, that it has declined since that 103 high. And it not only has declined, but lately it has broken to a new low below all the previous lows. And it will drop probably at least to 89, maybe a little lower on this leg. But what it says is that all of that air back there, it's not shown on the chart, but in 14 and 13 and so forth, when the dollar was going straight up, is now gone. I mean, it is now where the dollar's fallen into, and it's a vacuum of support. There's no support there. Now, with currency exchange rates, we know that central banks manipulate their currency exchange rates, period. There's no question about that. How much, how often, and when they are doing it, when we can identify a move as that, is another question. But Trump wants to make America more economically competitive. It's not true, but one of the nostrums that establishment economists and central bankers use is the idea that if you depreciate your currency, it will make your economy more competitive. So maybe this is the nice government men doing this. But in any event, the dollar is broken, and technically it ought to go much, much lower. What that means is that gold and silver will profit from that drop because there's a long-term sense in which they are negatively correlated, that is, with the dollar. That is, they go up when the dollar goes down and vice versa. So it looks like we're in for an extended period of dollar weakness, which is a flip from what we saw into 2017. So for the next several years, we can look for dollar weakness with all that implied. The other big news item of 2018, I think, is going to be rising interest rates. And it would be almost impossible for me to overstate how much effect, how many things, how thoroughly rising interest rates affect the economy, because basically every asset is valued on the basis of the interest rate. And when interest rates rise, prices fall. Interest rates rise, bond prices fall. Everything else falls because it's all being re-rated. This is a picture of the 10-year note yield. And you'll notice that it's been suppressed. And the Federal Reserve has done this. Central banks have done this. This is not natural, what you see up there. They have suppressed rates all the way to 2008, and then increasingly in 2008 when they instituted zero interest rate policy. So if you'll look at that purple line, you'll notice we got a bottom. We got two different bottoms here around 14. And then if you go back to 2008 when the Fed really began to squeeze down interest rates in earnest, you see that it has dropped. That's what that purple line is. It has dropped. And this year, the yield on the 10-year note broke through that downtrend line and is now trading higher than it than it was at any point last year. So if you just think of a spring, if you wind a spring tighter and tighter and tighter, the tighter you wind it, the harder it's going to snap back when you let go of that crank. And interest rates have been suppressed for 35 years, and they are literally set to pop. The next chart 6, shows the 30-year T-bond. This is the price, not the interest rate, not the yield. And you'll see that the suppression of interest rates has kept that 30-year bond rising until that top in early in July of 2016. And I thought at the time that was probably the top. That's a throwover, by the way, where you see it poking up above that upper boundary line. So I thought that was the top at the time. If you look at the next chart, which is chart 7, which is the 30-year bond for 2 years, you can see that after that top, it's maintained a decline. And then it started trading sideways, climbing that purple line until it broke down out of that purple line in 2017. So if the next chart 8, is a close-up of that, and it shows that there was a head and shoulders formation where that support was, and boom, it broke down out of that support, and now it's gone much lower. It broke down, it came back for that final kiss goodbye there, and then it's faded off again. Now, this is not happening fast, but at some point, it's going to happen very, very fast, and the reason is because the central banks of the world, by lowering interest rates, have been raising bond prices and created a bond bubble. So everybody in the world is holding these bonds, and when they all start trying to get out, they're going to find out how narrow that door is, because right. There's not much room. So that's the. I think interest rates, though, you really cannot ignore the implication of what interest rates rising means. It means that every asset in the economy will be re-rated according to the new higher interest rates. And every asset means stocks, bonds, real estate, everything, because the interest rate is used to rate or price every asset.
Well, but there's also something else, and that is that every budget, every overhead of any entity that has debt is going to experience inflating expenses.
Oh, don't even talk about it. Right. Because those companies that have been using cheap and available money to buy back their own stocks and keep the prices up, they're not going to do that anymore. And people who just simply, companies who simply just borrow money to do business are going to have a much higher interest expense.
Right.
So, yeah, it's the implications of the rising interest rates are larger than almost anything else we face. Moving over to gold. This is a weekly chart that goes back to 2011. Every bull market, every uptrending market, has what I call a midlife crisis. If you think about the stock market, started up in 1982 in a bull market, the Dow did, and then in 1987, fall of 1987, dropped from about 2750 to about 1700. Horrible. Everybody thought that was the end of the world. Took it about 3.5 years to overcome, to get back to the level it was at when that crash began. And then it went from there went from 2750 up to 11,700, the Dow did. So you get these midlife crises, and everybody thinks, oh, well, that market's over, that bull market's over, that stuff will never come back. And that's what gold has been experiencing since 2011. It went up to 1900 in 2011. If you look at this chart, you see that red downtrend line has been the big fact of life since 2011. Period. That's the big fact of life. And until it gets over that trend line, nothing is happening. But notice that in 2015, it made a low, and it has never gone below that low. That's about 1045. And all the succeeding lows, as we've gone forward in time, have been higher. And in fact, that high in July of 19 was higher, too. So what it's doing is it's crowding, it's broken out. It's above now above its 200-day moving average. It's now above that downtrend line, and it's cramming into that flat-top triangle, and it's going to break out of that flat-top triangle. That's the one, the top line is that purple line, and I'm calling it 1350 to 1360 is that level. Well, I'm not the only one in the universe who can read a chart. You know, there are a whole bunch of people who can, and when they see that gold break over 1350 and 1360, and even more so over 1400, it will attract buyers like bloody fish in the waters attract sharks. So this is a great, it hasn't broken out yet, and we want to get above 1350, 1360 to prove it. But this has all the beginnings of a rally in it. And yes, it's been slow because it always is slow at the beginning. So having said that about gold, let's look at silver. This is also a chart back to 2011. And you can see that actually silver bottomed about the same times as gold and has created this rising uptrend of higher bottoms, higher lows. But, and it's broken out, there's a red arrow there to show you it's broken out over the downtrend line from 2011, but it got up to a new high in July of 2016 and just hadn't done anything since then. And so now we're waiting for silver to, it's let me make a point, it is normal, it is usual, it is expected for silver to be weaker than gold at the beginning of a precious metals rally. Silver's the little sister, and silver always lags behind until things get going, and then silver powers by gold and gains much, much faster. So we're looking at 1850 now. That's sort of the tripwire, but it really needs to get up over about $21, and until we see that, silver won't attract big, big buyers, but that time will come. That's what this chart is pointing towards. So I'm full of joy and enthusiasm and exhilaration looking at these charts because we've been laboring through this recovery since the end of 2015, and now we're getting close. The next chart shows the gold silver ratio since the bottom since the low in 2011, and I'd just like to point out that recovery took all the way to March, lasted all the way to March of 2016. It kept rising, rising, rising. So even after the prices had bottomed, the ratio continued up. It peaked then definitively at 85, and then it dropped down to 64, and now it's been in this correction since July of 2013. Got up to 80.93 recently. I would still swap gold for silver even at these rates because they're very high. If you look at the next chart, which is number 12, you see a close-up of this gold-silver ratio since 2016. You can see that bottom. It fell from 85 to 65. That's 24% on the first fall. So the next fall is going to be more than 24%. because the next leg down is the third leg down, which is going to be really, really vigorous and enthusiastic. So the recent correction carried up to 80. Now it's turned down. The next target, and you know this can be frustrating watching this, but the next target for a swap is 30-1, which is way, way down from where we are. And I'm confident that we'll get that because the long-term target for the entire bull market is about 16-1. But we'll have time to do a couple of trades before that comes. And that's all I know.
Well, I wanted to bring up a little bit about what the central banks have been up to, because we've seen, while the price has been coming down, you see central banks around the world accumulating, particularly China and Russia. So China and Russia during this period have almost doubled their holdings. Now, what's interesting is that doesn't change gold as a percent of total reserves that much for China. It's a little bit higher. Russia, it's significantly higher. And it's a very interesting position when you look at Russia, because as a country, they have almost no debt. China has very heavy debt and very heavy dollar debt. One of the possibilities for the dollar to protect it from, you know, fundamental weakness, which is clearly there, is the fact that during this period, you know, dollars have been lent all over the world. So that's going to keep some kind of demand for the dollar for some period of time. But last year, we saw Russia and China move aggressively forward to create alternative liquidity systems and financial systems. But one of the things they did is they took the BRICS, which include four of the biggest gold producers in the world, and started to set up a gold trading system. And we have the Chinese coming out now with the oil futures backed by gold. That's expected in March, I think. But I absolutely believe one of the things they're going to do is they're going to take cryptocurrencies and back them with gold. To me, that's the logical next step. And if you just look at what they're up to, what it says to me is the long-term fundamental demand for gold is doing nothing but headed up. So this is the first year, Franklin, where, you know, I've said all along, if you don't have gold, now's the time to buy. Here's your opportunity. But I think the fundamentals behind a real turn back into the bull is very significant this year.
Oh, yeah. Well, if nothing else, you've got these overblown bubbles in stocks, bonds, and real estate, and Bitcoin, that are coming down, or going to come down, probably into the first quarter at the most. And that money that's coming out of there is going to be looking for a refuge. It's going to be looking for someplace to go. So where is it going to go? I mean, the gold is the logical recipient of all that attention. So yes, I agree with you. I think there's a huge fundamental demand underneath the market. And you know, something I'd like to point out to you is, this is just my interpretation, and I'm no Elliott Wave expert, but if you look at the period from 99 to 2011, I think that is leg one up in the market, and then from 2011 to 2015 is leg two down. And we started leg three up, and leg three up always moves further than that first leg. It's a higher percentage gain. So the first leg up gained 7.5 times. So the next leg up from 1040 or 1045 will gain at least 7.5 times, but more than 7.5 times. So the position right now, from a technical standpoint, if you can buy at the bottom of a two-wave, that's the safest place you can buy. And we've already got a two-wave that's proved itself with a series of higher bottoms. So it's sort of the best of all possible worlds for gold.
So let me talk about the household budget of everybody listening to this call. What you're talking about, if the dollar breaks the 92 line, and I know it's below that now, but I want to see certain, I want to see it below that for a certain amount of time before I'm sure it breaks the line. But if it breaks the 92 line, you know, then we're talking about significantly higher commodity prices for the normal household budget in the United States, because so much is exported. And if the typical household budget has higher interest rates, which will translate not just into sort of higher costs for them on their own debt, if they're taking on debt or have variable rate debt, but it's going to hit across the board on, everything they buy and use. So all the companies, all the, the utilities are going to have higher costs. Everybody's going to have higher costs. So it's going to hit you across your expense budget. And then if you have a falling dollar, commodities are higher. What you're talking about in terms of household inflation is very, very significant.
Oh yeah, very much so. That's, there's nothing that has a more searching effect than a change in the interest rate. But when you add to that a problem with the economy, with the dollar, an inflationary loss of purchasing power with the dollar, it puts you in a, you're getting a 1-2 punch. You're getting hit from the right and
Right.
hit from the left, right.
Right. So we're coming into elections in 2018 in November. And the question's going to be, what does rising interest rates and rising commodity prices, what's the impact coming into the election?
It doesn't elect Republicans, I can tell you that. I
Right.
mean, the reason I say that is because people vote against incumbents when the economy gets bad. I mean, that's just kind of a general truth. And the thought of more years and personalities like Bernie Sanders is just enough to give anybody a splitting headache. Because what these people are going to want are what they'll call solutions, but they're the kind of, they're just applied socialism, and what they do is make any economy more inefficient. And that's what we're suffering from already.
Right.
Our problem right now is we've got too much government trying to run the economy, and it's just it's a nightmare.
Right.
But so we'll get more of it. So we pray that God is merciful and won't actually give us the government we deserve. But if it's more Democrats, which means more socialism, and I don't like Republicans either, by the way, you know that. I don't have to make a big thing out of that, because they're just as socialistic as the Republicans, except they're socialistic in favor of corporations. So I'm, that all of this feels kind of, I don't want to be apocalyptic, but I turned to Justin the other day. We were talking about this interest rate thing, and I turned to my son Justin. I said, maybe living out here on a farm might be a pretty good idea over the next couple of years. It might
Well,
not
I
look
think
like
it's fair
perfection.
to say the way to deal with that is, in fact, do it yourself. In other words, the more you can, if you look at the economy over the last 30 years, we've kind of disintermediated our balance sheets and income statements. But the more you can cancel out that disintermediation, the more you can do for yourself, the more protected you are against inflation.
Oh yeah. Well,
Now,
that
it's
really the big sales point of Bitcoin was the disintermediation. The fact that it eliminated all the intermediaries in the financial system. But you can do a lot of that for yourself.
Well, one thing that's interesting coming into the elections, what I've seen is Bitcoin is being used to launder a tremendous amount of money, I believe, from the agencies and people like Soros to all the activists running around doing all these, burning stuff. And it's hard for me to believe that they'll give up that tool before November 2018. So I think Bitcoin's still going to be available to do those kind of things. The other thing I wanted to mention, because you are a farmer, is that according to the latest statistics, global food prices were up 8% in 2017. And so I wanted to just add on, if you look at what's happening to people's budgets, 8% is a pretty significant rise. And that's before interest rates starts up or the dollar starts falling. And so we could be looking at another, greater than 8% rise in 2018.
Well, and the worst part of it is it's not nutritious food.
Right.
Most of it is not nutritious food. One of the problems that we have on a raising meat that has no chemical treatments and on soil that has no chemical treatments. Well, it costs more because a lot of what we do is done by hand, and
right.
It's not as fast as industrial farming. But of course, the outcome is much, much better. But that means that we have to charge more. And it's not a commodity. It's not subsidized by the government like so many products in farming are. So we bear the full cost. We're not subsidized. So the interesting thing is it just makes what you're telling me that food is rising makes me feel better because it means that people are going to maybe understand that, yes, they have to pay a little bit more for clean food, but it's worth it.
Right. It is worth it.
Yeah, and there's not such a big gap. I think that's, you've always said this, and we've talked about it over and over and over, but that's the fundamental problem that gets very, very little attention, is nutrition. People
right.
eat crummy food, and so they lead crummy lives, and they have crummy health. Wow, that's
right.
a surprise, isn't it?
Right.
You know.
Well, I would say, but it's broader than that. It's the absence of integrity in the system. So if all the institutions and people you're doing business with in your government, don't have integrity vis-a-vis you, then you're fighting a downward spiral. So it's, it's happening and you're paying the federal government money and, they're using that money to spray aluminum on your head and on and on and on, or to, to have food standards where, you're eating plastic rice. So, the absence of, we've reached a point where the absence of integrity is at breaking point, and you throw higher interest rates and higher commodity prices on that, and something's going to give, is what I think politically. So in closing, let's just revisit. If you are just, figure you're a busy person and you're just going to watch a couple of indicators, what should people watch? We should watch the U.S. dollar index. We should watch the price of gold. And we should watch the interest rate on the 30-year T-bond. If you were going to pick three indicators, what should we keep our eye on?
Well, I'd pick the 10-year yield because
okay.
the 10-year T-note yield, on stock charts, they can put in the symbol dollar sign TNX, and even you can follow it there, and it's very easy to create a chart there and go and visit it and watch. But the 10-year yield is kind of the benchmark or bellwether that people watch. And then the U.S. dollar index, the symbol for that on stock charts is dollar sign USD, like U.S. dollar. And I'd watch that. And then the other one is gold, dollar sign gold. Just
right.
the symbol for that. But if you watch those three things, they're going to imply what's going to happen to stocks. Rising interest rates are hard on stocks because it raises costs.
Actually, I'll tell you, rising interest rates, as long as it's within 150 basis points a year,
uh-huh.
it's the stock market generally can take up to 150 basis points a year. If you see it spike more than that in a year, then you're in for trouble.
Right. Well, and when you start an upturn, too, interest rates are liable to be rising. But at this point, when the market is overblown, overpriced by any measure, then it's not going to be good.
Well, but here's the thing. The U.S. market is way overblown. But if you look at the international markets or emerging markets, not as much. So, one of two things can happen. The whole global market can adjust, or, the U.S. market can adjust more than others. That's the question.
Yeah, well, I don't want to be there with that. I don't want to depend on the answer to that question. I'm too big a chicken.
Right.
The only way I know to stay out of a bar fight is to leave the bar before the fight breaks out. And so that's always perfect.
The question is knowing how to know when it's the top.
There you go. Before the bottles start flying.
Well, what I've done with my clients is most of what we have in equities, most of what they have in equities is in hedged equities.
Yeah.
And if you hedge, then you continue to stay invested. You get the dividend. We basically performed at half of what we would be if we were long. But that still turned out to be really attractive. And in the, 10 years ago, you would have gone into fixed income, but now fixed income is not a good place to go.
No, because you can't get
So,
enough money out of it. You can't.
right. So
They've driven interest rates down so low.
here's the thing. If you're in a portfolio of stocks that have decent dividends and have a decent purpose in life, they're basically useful companies instead of organized crime. And you run a hedge on them, that's going to be a better return and safer than a fixed income portfolio.
Yeah,
So,
as long as people understand that when you hedge, you automatically cut you cut down the possibility of gain. I mean, not that you won't gain at
I've
all.
no abs yeah, you get
You're
so
having to
many.
pay for the hedge out of the potential gain, and that's the
Right.
way you're doing it. It's like buying an insurance policy. Then you don't buy an insurance policy for free.
You give up some of the gain, you protect yourself on the downside, but a hedged equity portfolio of really conservative stocks is a better financial bet than the fixed income markets right now. Now, if
Oh.
interest rates go up, then that could change. And I'll tell you where the stock market gets clocked, the day that everybody can get 5% in a responsible, reliable fixed income, it's going to pull the rug out from under the equity markets.
Well, that's where you're going. That's where interest
Maybe.
rates are going.
Maybe. Maybe. I'm a skeptic.
Well, the Fed doesn't control interest rates. They control their discount rates. But once the bond markets get spooked about where bonds are going to go, it's pretty hard to stop a stampede.
Well, but here's the question. When we get a stampede, Franklin, are the central banks going to intervene, or are we going to have a war?
Oh, don't say that. Oh, mercy.
No, I have to say that. I
Don't
have
ask
to
that
say that.
question. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Either one is possible, that's for sure.
Right. Okay, well, we'll see what happens. 2018 will unfold. And hopefully, we look forward to talking to you after the first quarter, Franklin. Anything exciting about you this year you want to talk about? The money changer, what the money changer is going to be up to this year?
I'm just so looking forward to relief from 5 years of bad markets in gold and silver. I don't know what to do. I mean, it's been very skinny around here for a long time.
Well, maybe 2018 will be plumper.
I think it will. I think it'll be better for gold investors too.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Anybody who knows what you know, who can watch the world go crazy over Bitcoin and keep their sanity, that's a great, powerful person. So I congratulate you on a great performance in 2017.
You don't know how many smoking emails I've gotten. You don't know when. Okay, that's okay.
Okay, you have a wonderful day, Franklin. Thank you.
Okay, God bless you. Thank you. Bye-bye.